Everyone, my name is Mavi Shami. I am co-director of the Development Management Program. Aside from running the program itself, I also teach the core course on Development Management, which is also called Development Management. I'm assuming most of you have looked up the degree and you know what it's about, but essentially this is a course on sort of the institutions, on sort of institutions and development. The course looks at, the core course would look at big questions about why are some countries rich, other countries are poor, why are some countries better governed than others, why do some systems work in some countries but not in others, how do we implement good development policies, what systems would work to promote anti-poverty policies, and so forth. And within the degree, you would take this core course, but you would also take two other units of courses, which in most cases results in about four optional courses, which would be centered around your research interests. So you could choose to focus on climate and development. You could choose to focus on, human rights. You could choose to focus on the private sector and development. There's all sorts of strands you can take. But also we have certain specialisms you could choose. So if you decided to come for development management, you could also decide to do development management with an economics development focus. And that would just mean that your optional courses would be more economic centered so as to give you a degree with an economics specialism, and your dissertation would be done accordingly. Similarly, you can do a population and development specialism, and you can do an African development specialism. And the details of all of this is on the website, so you can look them up, or you can ask specific questions to them if you want. But in a nutshell, this is a degree which focuses on. Figuring out the big questions of development and try and get a better handle on how to improve outcomes in developing countries. Without further ado, I'm gonna open the floor to questions and take any questions you guys might have. Do you wanna just ask your questions rather than write them? Because then it's much easier and everyone can hear the question also. So
the first one's from Joachim.
Yeah, Joachim, are you there? Joachim Deck?
I am, yeah. Hi.
Hi. Where are you joining us from?
I'm from Santiago, Chile.
Oh, hi.
So it's actually 8 in the morning here. I actually missed a virtual day event yesterday because I thought I was 3 hours in the future and I wasn't, so kind of funny there. But now I'm on time, so good morning, everyone. I have a couple of questions there. I was looking at the MPA, International Development Specialism, as well. So I was curious as to what differences I can expect and similarities as well. And of course, between the development studies and the development management core courses, I find them quite similar. So apart from the capstone project, which is an obvious difference, I'd like to know in those core courses, what are there substantial differences, or are they just one more practical and the other one more theoretical? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a great question. So they're both theoretically grounded degrees. And you are right to notice that one of the big difference between development management, development studies is the project. So you get a live project. This is not a dummy project that we create. This is actually a live project with clients. So our clients have ranged from the UN to PwC to Deloitte. We've had ActionAid, we've had Save the Children, we've had small NGOs from India, from Bangladesh, from Sudan, from all over. So we get a range of projects that you work on engaging with the client. And it's not, again, for them also, it's not a dummy project they create, it's actually something they're interested in. So they also engage quite actively because they're quite concerned. The other big difference between development studies and development management is the focus. So development studies is a little broader and looking at sort of issues regarding to development. Development management focuses a little more on institutions in development. So the core course in particular focuses more on what sort of institutions work, what sort of institutions do not work. We have a whole block on governance. While development studies talks about governance, we go in much, much more detail. We talk about the differences between authoritarian and democratic regimes. We talk about how you can have regime change. Similarly, we talk about the private sector and the public sector. How do the two play out in development? What role do they have to play and how do they engage together? We also go in quite a bit of detail about regarding the role of civil society. It's a much more focused course on institutions and development, whereas development studies is more about the broader aspects of development.
It's more, just to fill in here, it's more historical, it's more structural, it's focused on, as Mavish says, not so much focused on institutions, but has a kind of broader macro historical, macro structural kind of orientation to development. So the way that we think about it is that, you know, the study of international development actually has multiple histories and multiple ways of doing things. And these are two of the biggest approaches, this kind of macro historical, macro structural approach of development studies, and then the more institutionally focused, more problem focused kind of approach of development management. And was that it's not just that there is this consultancy project, but it also reflects the fact that development management is somewhat more problem focused, more focused on some of those more specific tasks of development versus the kind of broader historical sweeps that you would get from development studies.
Yeah, and it's worth adding though, because some students come thinking that this is more of, it's not as theoretical, but you know, it is very theoretically grounded. So you will get a very strong grounding in theory, just geared towards, as Kathy said, problem solving.
Are there modules in common in the two core courses?
Yeah, so you have, your core courses are different, but then your options are completely up to you. Whether you did development studies or development management, you have the option to take all the optional courses offered in the international development department. But then you can also find if there are certain courses outside the department that are relevant to you, you can talk to your advisor and in consultation with them, you can pick courses outside also. Your core course, your optional courses are not bound by whether you're doing development studies or development management.
So I, for example, the course that I teach is global environmental governance. And so my global environmental governance class typically has people in it from development studies, development management, IDHE, HID, the geography department, the international relations department. It's always a really interesting mix of people. And in my case, I also, last time I taught it with 70 students, had people from 29 countries in it. So it gives you something of a flavor of what LSE is like, because it's an incredibly international experience. I think we're the second most international university in the world in terms of having students who come from really everywhere. And whatever program you end up in, this is true. All of our programs have people who come from all over the world. And so it's a fascinating mix of backgrounds. And the options courses tend to be like mine, where they are not limited to people from just one of the programs, but they really are from all of the programs. And so, and we try to be somewhat responsive to that in these options courses. But that's where you'll meet the students from the other programs. The core courses are unique to the programs. But then the options courses are available for everyone.
Does anyone else have a question?
I see the program as being very broad and also very flexible, because the core course, as you were saying about, as you were speaking about, is related to institutions, but then you have such a variety of optional courses. And I was wondering, to which extent do you envision or encourage students to find their specialism within the program? I see that there are some specialisms that are related to geographical area, but I was wondering also in relation to the topic. You just said that there is an advisor that is meant to look. So yeah, I was just wondering, what is your approach with that? But maybe I'll hand it over to you and then I have something.
So when you arrive at the LSC, every student is given, is assigned to a member of staff who is their mentor. And the job of that mentor is to help you pick the courses which are most suitable to what you want to do. So when I get my mentees, we sit down in the first week and we have a detailed chat about what their background was and what they want to do in the future. And then based on that, we talk about all the potential courses they want to take, and we sort of hash out what would be the best way to go about given their future career decisions. And there's different ways to do it. Some students are very clear on what they want to do. So certain students might want to focus on climate related jobs in the future. So they'll pick courses relating to climate policies and climate change and climate and development. And sort of pick courses that complement all of that. And then their dissertation would be done accordingly also. Whereas other students might not have a very clear idea of what they want to do. So they might have a sense of what area they want to focus on, but not really, they want to keep their options open. And then in that case, you know, we would advise them to take a slightly broader set of courses with slightly varying aspects. But also, you know, as their advisor or their mentor, my job is also to sort of make sure that, you know, the courses they're picking, there's not a lot of overlap. And it sort of helps get them the most holistic and nuanced learning experience that they can. And the great thing about the LSE is both in the first term and the second term, you have a 2 week of what we call the shopping period. So you come with an idea of what courses you want to take, and you can go and try them out for a week or two. And it could be that, you know, you go to the course and you decide, actually, this is not what I wanted to do. So you can then pick, so you're not tied to them right in the beginning, you can then pick something else. And as I said, this is all done in close contact with your mentor, who will constantly be advising you on what courses would work best. Yeah? Kathy, do you want to add something?
I was just going to, well, we're actually, I was going to email you privately, Mavish, that the registration process is changing for next year and will actually be moved earlier. But
oh, okay.
I just wanted to comment that not only do students come from lots and lots of different countries, but they also come from really incredibly different backgrounds. So some students who come to us might have had a quite narrowly focused degree in, say, anthropology or in economics. And they come to us in part because what they want the degree to do for them is to broaden them out and to give them a broader vision of what development is. So that's, I think, one of our kind of modal students coming to us. And then there are sometimes students who have been doing a much more diverse set of coursework. Some of it depends on what undergraduate education looks like in these different countries, because in the US, for example, where I'm from, undergraduate education is quite broad. And so for some of those students, they would come to us to focus. But this is a way of thinking about our programs, because the development studies and development management are really broad programs. And any specialization in them is something that you choose yourself to do, or you could simply be broad. But our other two programs, health and international development, and international development and humanitarian emergencies, are for people who know that they have very specific interests in those topics, and that will be most of what they focus on in their coursework with us. And so some of what you should be thinking about, not just for our degrees, but I think in terms of what you're looking for in a graduate program more generally, is, you know, where, what kind of student are you? What kind of educational experience are you looking for? Because development management really is, I think, an unusually broad kind of development studies program, as is development studies. And some of you will want that, and some of you will want something that is more focused. But what I like about those two programs, our two broad programs, is that you can, inside of them, create your own focus, as Mavish was saying. So you can either treat them as broad as the broad programs that they are, or you can further specialize within them. I see that there's a question here, another question in the chat, about whether it's compulsory to submit a research proposal. I think there's a statement of interest, but it's not actually a research proposal per se at the MSc level. And in fact, one of the things that we expect is that you'll be working with the mentor that Mavish mentioned. We're doing it right now. We're sort of in the middle of, you've come back from reading week. It's time to really get serious about what your dissertation proposal is going to be. So we're really in the middle of that process right now. So you are asked to talk about what your interests are and your aims for doing this program, but it's not a program where you're accepted or rejected on the basis of a particular research proposal that you present. Now, that would be true at the level, but not at the MSc level that we're talking about here.
Any other questions?
Hi, I'm from South Africa. I just wanted to know, so do we have to have an idea already? Can you hear me? Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm getting feedback. No. So I just wanted to know, would we need to already know what we would want to do our dissertation on? And if, I mean, would we need to already look for like who our supervisors would be, or is that like the role that our mentor would play and assist us with?
Go ahead, Kathy. I was gonna say, some students have very specific ideas of what they want to do, and they pursue those ideas all year, and that's great, and there's room for that as long as it's something about international development. And then I think there are a number, maybe the majority, I'm not quite sure how it would break down numerically. Many students are like you in the sense of they like the idea that they're going to be expected to do a big research project, but they're not sure at the beginning exactly what that will be. And so that is, as I was saying, that's part of these meetings with mentors that are going on right now, of starting to do that discussion for people like you who may not have such an idea about what they want to do. So again, I think maybe what you should be hearing from us is that our programs have a lot of flexibility, and that people do them many different ways, and that in general, that flexibility is something that we like, that we try to give to students. So people can come through our programs and have really quite different experiences depending on whether they come in like you with a pretty open, so somebody like you might well end up then taking courses that kind of sample across topics and try to give you a broad look at what kinds of things might be part of international development. Whereas, I mean, I've just finished a book on wind and solar power in Brazil and South Africa, you know, so sometimes people come in with topics like that, and then they've got, then they want to take the environment classes, or maybe they want to take the courses on economic policy and things like that. So, but we really have a lot of room for people to create the degrees that they want inside our 4-degree framework.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you'll find that the students who come with sort of an idea of what their dissertation would be, that also changes quite a bit because, you know, you interact with faculty and students around you with different experiences. You're exposed to all sorts of new ideas, new theories, new concepts, and all of that helps build your sort of intellectual toolbox. So even if you think you know what you want to write, you'll find that when you come here, you'll be exposed to so many new ideas and so many new things that will help sort of reshape what you were wanting to do. So it is, as Kathy said, it's a flexible and extremely dynamic process. And it's a very exciting process because, as Kathy said, right now we're just going through it where students are sort of thinking about their dissertations. And you know they've been exposed to so many new ideas and concepts, and now they're sort of rethinking what they had thought before, and they're trying to come up with what would be the most interesting thing to do because they've got so many new interesting ideas to pick from. Yeah. Any other question? Oh, we've got one in the chat. Thinking process using. When will we hear a decision process? Kathy, do you have any idea on this? As far as I know, it's sort of done on a rolling basis. So they look at applications as you submit them.
Yeah, I don't know because this is actually centralized at the university. So we don't do it in the department. And there's a separate set of sessions that are about these more general admissions questions and questions about COVID and, you know, visas and all these other kinds of things that are not handled at department level at all. So what you want to do is go back to the list of LSE sessions and find one of those more general sessions about admissions, because we don't manage that here in the department. We have somebody who manages it on our behalf.
It's worthwhile adding on that note, to pick up on what Marvin said, that the applications are processed on a rolling basis. So they don't wait until the end and then look at them all together. They are looked at as they sort of come in. And applications, as you're aware, are already. So, you know, that process has already started. But it is managed centrally by the Graduate Admissions Office.
Okay.
Another question there from Jochen, Marvish.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that. So the economic specialism is you have to take, sorry, where did it go? You have to take a set number of courses. So you would take economic development courses and a macroeconomic and a microeconomic or an, what's the third one called? Let me just pull it up. I can tell you exactly what they are. But essentially you have three set of courses out of which you have to do two. And your dissertation is an economics center dissertation. So that will be discussed with the person running the economic specialization and will be sort of a quantitative one which makes use of economic or econometric tools to get an econometric specialization. The MPA specialization, on the other hand, is on, it's more policy-based specialism. So while it would focus on economics also, they're also, it's not as economic driven. The dissertation does not have to be the same economics driven dissertation. It would be more policy based. The difference is also on the courses that you would take. Kathy, do you wanna add something about the MPA specialism?
I mean, this is one of the confusing things about LSE, which is that we're entirely social sciences, but we have something like 24 departments. So if you're interested in issues of international development, they are also covered in other departments. But I think the key point there about the distinguishment between these two degrees is that all of the MPA degrees are very policy focused, and not only economic policy focused, but sort of policy process focused, policy content focused, so policy focused. And then the one in our department is distinguished by the fact that it is more focused on, so the DV490 course, for example, is one that's really a course in economic reasoning and gives people a basic, works with people to develop a set of basic econometric skills, very basic econometric skills in this case. And then there's the micro and the macro versions of the courses as well. But it is highly focused then on economics policy. So Joanna Naratomi, for example, who teaches the macro course, has a lot of work on public finance and taxation and economic topics, whereas the MPA program would not be necessarily focused on economic topics at all necessarily. But policy topics of various kinds.
Yeah, and I'm just looking up the MPA International Development. Yeah, the MPA, if I and Kathy can correct me, it's a 2-year program. It's exactly as Kathy was saying, it's quite policy driven. So that's the big difference, right? Whereas the economic specialism will, it'll teach you economic tools and it'll try to, you know, it'll sort of essentially try to teach you an economics framework, and you'd be expected to apply an economics framework in your dissertation along with quantitative tools to demonstrate that you have a handle on these issues. If I'm not wrong, the MPA is that run by the government department, Kathy?
No, there's a School of Public Policy.
Okay. So I think it would be worthwhile going to their open day also. And then you can ask.
But I think the other thing to say is that the School of Public Policy is not focused on developing countries per se. So the School of Public Policy is also looking at policy in Europe and policy in North America. And then within that, the specialism would let you focus on international development issues in particular, but the School of Public Policy itself does not have that focus. Whereas we are entirely focused on the study of international development, and then economics is a possibility within that. We don't actually, at the moment, just looking at this next question here, we do not currently have an emphasis on quantitative methods in the study of development. And so this is not, in fact, none of our programs are primarily quantitatively focused. If you do this specialism, that is the most of a quantitative focus that we would have. But in fact, much of our coursework, most of our course readings they might be quantitative. They're just as likely to be qualitative. So it is primarily in terms of our expectations for you that you have familiarity with these different methods and be able to read in them. But most people in our programs write qualitative dissertations and are doing qualitative work. So this is not really a program that has a focus on quantitative methods. If you come in and you have a quantitative background and you want to do a quantitative dissertation, you can do that. And we have mentors who can help you do that, but that's not a focus of the program. And then I would say, what are the strengths of the program against two-year development practitioner programs in other universities? Most of those two-year programs that I've seen are part-time. And so it's a matter of how it is that you want to do it. So a lot of those part-time programs will have people who are actually working as full-time practitioners as they do their degrees, whereas the students in our programs tend to be doing primarily their degrees while they're doing in the 1 year that they're doing them. So ours are much more intensive, and it would be difficult to really go on working alongside of them. But that's one of the things that I would see as a difference. The other thing is that you ask about two-year development practitioner programs. There are other two-year international development programs that are not practitioner programs. Those are ones that typically have much more extensive research as part of their dissertation process. And whereas we have this shorter process, which means then that many of our students end up doing desk-based research for their dissertations rather than doing field work, just again, because of what can and can't be fit into a one-year program.
I mean, the one thing I can add to this is it's an excellent degree. It's internationally recognized. We have students after this degree going on to do PhDs in leading universities around the world, or we have students going on to work in all sorts of multinational organizations, all sorts of private sector firms. They get placed very, very well. So you can actually look at on the website, you can see where our students end up, and you can see most of them do extremely well, which means that you can actually do this degree in 1 year and get a really good job outcome or end up in a really good place to work rather than having to spend 2 years doing it. So it's a more efficient way of getting a degree. And as Kathy pointed out, it's an extremely intensive degree. So it's not that those 2 years degree give you more in terms of theory or academic literature. We just expect that this is all you will do, and you will not do anything else. And that's why we can put it all into one year and still have our students placed extremely well. Yeah. So there's a question about level of focus on African institution development. There's actually quite a lot of focus on Africa. You can act, if you choose to do the development studies, development management degree, you can also do a specialism in African development where you would take a course focusing on African development, and then you can take all sorts of other courses which focus on Africa. But also my co-program director, who also teaches on development management, he focuses on Ghana. So he brings in a lot of his experience from not just Ghana, but also other African countries that he looks at. So you do find a very strong African focus in the department. Kathy, do you want to add anything?
I was just going to add that in addition to our department itself, there's quite a strong Africa center here on campus. And one of the things that it features is it has programs for all of the students from Africa studying in all of the programs across the university. So there's quite a strong support network connected with the Africa Institute then, or it's the Africa Center now, becoming the Africa Institute, the Feroz Lajli Africa Center. So in addition to the focus in the department, there is a broader focus across the university. I mean, that said though, none of the core courses are specifically about African development. And in fact, one of the things that we think is quite an advantage of our department is that in addition to people who do a lot of research on Africa, we also have people like Mavish who do research on various Asian countries. I do my research, have done most of my research on Brazil and Latin America. So we have actually people drawing on really global experiences to look at that. And that might connect here to one of these questions that Ashoka asks about to what extent are the countries focused on developing countries per se as opposed to broader development issues. This is something of a live and ongoing debate in the field of development studies. So, but our department in particular is primarily focused on the problems of late development. So it is more focused on developing countries than it is on problems of development in countries that are otherwise broadly developed. And so that is very much a focus here. And that's just true across the board. So that is in fact a focus. Not only Africa, Asia, Latin America, countries of what's often called the Global South with all the problems of those terms, but it is primarily focused on developing countries.
Also, I mean, all faculty members focus on developing countries. And then when we teach, we bring in a lot of our own research, and because our focus is on the developing world or the Global South, as Kathy mentioned, that's what we bring in to the courses also. And your first question about the dissertation being centered around the Capstone project, not at all. So the two are not related at all. You might choose to do a topic similar to your consultancy project, but you'll have to be very careful to show that there is no overlap, because you can't self-plagiarize. You can't write two papers which are exactly the same. So you will have to make sure that those two are extremely separate and clearly demonstrate that there was no overlap. The Capstone project is completely different to your dissertation. And then we have some other questions. How common is-
So there's a couple of questions about students doing part-time.
Yeah.
You know, what's the proportion, and do we encourage or discourage such students?
It's possible, but it's quite unusual. So we would, every year we would have a couple of people studying part-time, but it is generally, our programs are not designed for that. So the programs are really designed to start in September and wind up at the end of August. And that's the schedule that really virtually everyone is going to be on. And so, as I say, every year there are a couple of students who for personal reasons end up doing programs like that, but that's not the way that our coursework and our dissertation process are designed. So, if you're really committed to going part-time, you can certainly apply to do that, but just know that you would be sort of off schedule for most of your peers who will be doing it full time.
Can I just ask on that? So even if we're studying full time, is there a possibility for us to do, like, if it's like assistant to the lecturers or tutors or any of those things, like to earn an income within the LSE space? Because I know, like, at our university we had where you could be a tutor, you could work in the library, you could do any of those things. Is there something like that at LSE? Or
it's not on a wide scale, in part because we don't have undergraduates. So usually where there are tutoring possibilities is because they're tutoring undergraduates, and we don't have undergraduates. So, and there are also, there are also restrictions on working that go with the visas and things like that. That will of course depend a lot on exactly where you're coming from and what kind of visa that you have. So it's not impossible, but I wouldn't say that it is common.
Right, and then...
So there's a question about applications and how can one maximize one's chances of getting onto the program, particularly with regard to the statement of interest. I can say something. Kathy or Marvish, you might want to say something.
Go ahead, Peter.
Right. So, so primarily the statement of interest is taken on board when considering other factors. And the academic qualifications that students have got and where they got them from is very important. And the Graduate Admissions Office looks at that as one of the main priorities, the grades, in other words. The expression of interest is important in terms of students that are borderline. But it's one of a number of factors that's actually taken into account. The problem with the statement of interest, it won't surprise you when I say what I'm about to say, is that they often tend to be quite similar. And lots of students really want to do the course. It's what will really make their life worthwhile, and so on and so on. So really, in terms of your statement of interest, worthwhile bearing in mind that you may want to get yourself to stand out from the pack.
The other thing I would just comment in addition to what Peter has said is that we do also use the statements of interest to make sure that what you think international development is actually matches what we do. So if we were to get a statement of interest that said that somebody was really interested in doing like an in-depth ethnographic study of school leavers in Liverpool, we would probably say that, you really don't fit our department. You want to study that somewhere else. So we've now, all of you 20 odd people, you have the secret information about what we do. So you want to be writing things that show that you understand what a degree in international development is, that show that you have interests in the things that the department actually studies and teaches about. And so that's part of it's a question of fit, I think, is one of the things that's also very much judged on the basis of the statement of interest. And as somebody who doesn't hear, but I have in my past university lives, read a lot of these, it's amazing some of the people who apply to programs where there really just is no fit at all. And you want to say, why didn't you apply to a school that would actually teach you the things that you want to learn? Because we're going to be teaching you the kinds of things that we've been talking about today. So that I think is important to, the fit question is probably the most important thing that you can show in your essay, that you're wanting to study the kinds of things that we actually teach about.
And I wouldn't worry about, so the question also asks that, if they don't have a research interest already or a research project in mind, I wouldn't worry about that, because as Kathy pointed out before, it's perfectly fine for you not to know what you want to write your dissertation on or what area of research you want to focus on. And that's what you'll come here and learn. I think the best thing you can do is look up the department, look up what we do, and look up what our courses are about, and then see if that's what you want to do, a research a interest statement which shows us that you are a good fit here.
So there's a question from Kelly about consultancy projects, getting a flavor as to what they might involve.
Yeah, so I can give you a concrete example. So one of the projects that I am, one of the set of students that are under me this year, they're working with the Adam Smith Institute. And they're given a project. So the Adam Smith Institute gives them what we call terms of references. So they tell them exactly what it is that they want these students to do. And it's sort of a question that they're trying to address along with all sorts of sub-questions they want the students to look at. And this is something that they're initially handed. And then the students take those DORs and they sit, it's usually a group of four, sometimes five. And then these four students sit and discuss whether these terms of references are doable in the amount of time they have or whether it's too much. And then they sort of amongst themselves decide what would be a more feasible way to do this. And then they go back to the client and they renegotiate the terms of references. So that's what's happening right now. These students are renegotiating with their clients what these terms of references should be. So this is exactly like if you had your private consultancy firm, this is what you would do with a client, right? You'd negotiate how the project should be done, what the deliverables should be, when they should be. And then once all that is decided, then the teams go away and start working on these projects. And whenever they need some information, whether they need data or there's something company specific that the company only can give them, they approach the client again and the client will hopefully provide most of that information. And then at the end of Lent term, we have a consultancy presentation. So that is when you will deliver your report, which is between 8,000 and 10,000 words, to your client and to us. And then there will be a presentation where you will present your results to the client and to us. And then you're graded on that accordingly. How much contact you have with the client is something that you have to negotiate with them. So that's, again, part of the learning process. We're teaching you to be, how would you do a live consultancy if you had to do it yourself? We almost never interfere in the relationship between you and the client. We are in the background. We are to help you sort things out. If you have a problem, you would come to us and ask us questions, how to resolve it. But you are the one dealing with the client as you would be in the real world, right? So this is essentially treated like it is a real life consultancy, and we are not involved in the relationship between you and the client. So amongst other things, you're also learning how to manage a client, how to manage your relationship with a client. The client might be a little difficult sometimes. How would you work around that? So, you know, everything you face in the real world. And you had another, so you were asking how do you get the project? So what happens is every year we have a list of clients. So around August, one of us starts contacting the companies, whether they have certain projects they want students to do and they need help with. So they give us their terms of references and they write up projects for us. And then those are made available. So the list is made available to you around the third week of the first term. And then you put down your first, I think you put down your top three preferences that you would like to work on. So, you know, you could say my first preference is Adam Smith Institute. My second preference is PwC. And my third preference is Ashoka in India. And we try our best to give everyone their first preference. I think most students, I can't give you an exact figure, but almost everyone gets their first two preferences. It's quite rare to fall down to your third preference. But even if you fall down to your third preference, they're all extremely interesting projects. And I've never heard any student ever say that they didn't enjoy it or they didn't like it. It usually works out to facilitate your preferences. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much. This consultancy project is kind of one of the biggest differentiators for me between this program and then the other development-related program I'm considering. So I really appreciate it. If I can ask one follow-up question also about the consultancy project, what kind of is the makeup of like private NGO multilateral institutions that are on that list that you place students within?
What's the makeup? How many what? Private NGOs?
Sorry, what's kind of the makeup of like the NGOs, private sector, multilateral institutions? Are any multilateral institutions on that list for the consultancy project, or are they mostly private sector?
No, we've had UNICEF, we've had UNHCR. I'm pretty sure we had something from the World Bank once. But it's quite a mix. I can't tell you exactly what will be there because we don't know till August. The mix changes every year. We have a couple of companies which come back every year and give us a project every year. And then we get a couple of new ones every year also. So I can't tell you precisely what the mix will be, but I can tell you this much, that it's a healthy mix. There's all three are equally relatively equally represented in there.
Okay. I would just comment too, if you are interested in the international organizations, we every year have a day when a number of those international organizations send their personnel people to LSE to meet with our students. And there's a dinner. And so I think I know for a fact that a lot of international organizations think of LSE graduates as being people they might potentially hire. I remember a couple of years ago when the CEO for the World Bank was here and said something like, we've already hired 300 LSE graduates, you know, in the history of the bank, and we need another 300 or something like that. But we have strong historic relationships with the multilateral organizations of various kinds. And a lot of our graduates, I have one of my current students, for example, is now, or I guess a recent student is now working for UNDP, for example, or UNEP. I mean, there's a lot of connection between the institution and these international institutions. So quite a close connection.
I'd also like to add, so in development management, the core course, what we do is we have our regular lectures, which are given by myself, Jonathan, and Jean-Paul Fagway. We're the three main teaching team members. But aside from those regular lectures and the seminars you have, we also run something called enrichment workshops. And what those are, they're done sort of a couple of Thursdays each term, and we get sort of leading practitioners around the world. So we'll get people from the World Bank, we'll get people from IMF, we'll get some academics who are working on relevant cutting edge issues. So you do constantly keep getting exposed to people quite high up in these organizations. And then aside from what we do at in the course, we also have a session every Friday evening where some leading members from the field, whether they're practitioners or academics, come and give a talk to students. And then afterwards there's drinks, so that you can engage with them. And then lastly, we have LSE has public events. So, you know, the LSE regularly, so on a given week, there will be on average 3 or 4 talks going around the school from, as I said, leading practitioners around the world or leading academics around the world. So I think rather than there being limited options to meet people, there's so many options that you're essentially scrambling to figure out which ones you have time to go for. So there's ample opportunities. And I think one of the biggest advantages LHC has is its location. Sort of London is a bit of a hub. People sort of going to different parts of the world tend to transit through London, which means that, you know, we get a lot of very interesting people who just happen to be passing by and then are very happy to come and give a talk. So you do get ample opportunities to meet very interesting people quite high up in all sorts of organizations.
Mavish, there's quite a few questions that have just come in at the end. And
okay.
I've just seen on the clock that time's running out.
All right,
there's a couple of questions from Jochen. The first is about law and legal perspectives being covered by our course. That probably has quite a short answer.
I think development management does not cover law or legal institutions directly. We do they're indirectly embedded in a lot of what we do, but it's not one of the direct things we address. Kathy, do you know if it's done in the department?
I was looking at this question earlier and thinking that in general, this is not what I would call a strong element of our program. So it's a good thing to talk about very briefly. It's the sort of topic where when you actually go and look at all the staff, you could find people who know things about the judiciary. Like I, for example, working on Latin America, know that the growth and changing role of the judiciary in Latin America has been quite a big regional phenomenon of the last 20 years. I could certainly supervise a dissertation or talk, give you things to read about that. It sort of works at the side of the things that I do, because actually the environmental area is one of the areas in which the judicial system has really become quite interesting and important in Latin America. So, but I would say if you really want your focus to be law and legal institutions, then you would probably want another program. It's not the sort of thing that would exclude you, but it is not central. And I don't think we have any courses specifically on it, even across all of our optional courses. And maybe I'll just go ahead and answer these next two questions, which are really questions about our student body.
Yeah.
We have, our students really vary. So, and I don't know what the actual breakdown would be, but I would say in all the courses that I've taught, I've seen quite a few students who come straight from undergraduate experiences of various kinds. And then also quite a few students who, join my global environmental governance class and have already been on the Peruvian negotiating team, or, are about to leave my course and go off to work at UNEP or and have been there before. So it's quite an interesting mix. And one couldn't really say that students are one or the other kind. It's really all kinds. I do not predict a downfall in multiculturality. And I say that in particular because, like, even this year in the heart of the COVID, we're actually seeing that fully maintained. So I think, we're all guessing about questions like what's going to happen with COVID. And the one thing that I think will matter more to us is not the pandemic so much as Brexit, because Brexit is going to make it more expensive for Europeans to come and study here. I think at one point LSE had almost 40% of its academic staff was European. So, but that's less true for us, because our department has actually always had students and staff that are much more from non-European parts of the world. So I would expect that the university as a whole and the department in particular are going to remain really multicultural. We are, even this year. I don't see why that would change in the future. I think that's one of our most important characteristics that is the biggest draw to people. And it's an interesting draw because it's a draw to people from everywhere, right? Nobody comes here who wants to see mostly people from their home countries. Everybody comes here because they want to see people from all these different countries. And that means that we always have people from all these different countries. So I don't see that likely to change at all. And I don't know the answer to Juliet's question about which degree would be the, do you mean in other universities?
Can I actually just say one thing to Juliet there? So while it is not a quantitative degree per se, I have a quantitative background, so does Jonathan and so does JP. Most of the lectures that we give and the literature that we use is quantitative. So while we would never ask you a question in the exam to sort of rerun a regression analysis or to discuss what the numbers mean, we do bring in a lot of quantitative research. And a lot of our students do, well, I don't have a number, but a number of our students do go on to do a quantitative-based dissertation. So just in a nutshell, while it's not a requirement that you have a quantitative background and it's not a quantitative degree per se, the literature we use is quite quantitative at times. And we do engage with the numbers. So we will put up regression tables and talk about what these figures mean and what it means. So it's more of sort of applied quantitative methods, more of talking about what the numbers symbolize, what are they highlighting, what are they telling them about policies, rather than deriving the numbers or deriving the tables. But I don't know about what other degree would be. I guess the only one I can think of is then an MSc in development economics in the econ department. But that would be it would have a very different flavor from the one that we run in international development, not just because of its focus on quantitative methods, but also just it's an economics degree, whereas we are more interdisciplinary. There's a lot of questions suddenly coming in.
Thanks. And I do need to get off. I have another meeting, so I will be leaving you all now. But Peter put in the email for sending follow-up questions. Please use that and let us know what you still want to know about what we're doing here. So I'm off, but I'll talk to you all later, I hope.
Yeah, I think I'm going to head out too. Thank you so much for coming, and I hope to see a lot of you next year. And I hope we've answered most of your questions. But yeah, if you have more, send them along. It is, I think it's one of the best degrees we have at LSE, but I'm a little biased. But it is a really, really great degree. And I think the one thing I would like to add is, and I think Kathy stressed this quite a lot, is that the amazing thing about studying at the LSC, and I think that's sort of, it's more than any other university, is the extreme diversity you encounter. So your learning will not just be from us, but it'll also be from all the students around you, because everyone coming to the LSC come from extremely different backgrounds, and they bring extremely different ideas and different worldviews. Which means that every time you interact with your cohort, you'll be exposed to ideas in a new way, and it forces you to step outside your comfort zone and think about things in a way that you had never thought about before, and you probably would not have sitting back home engaging with people who think and have similar experiences as yourself. So I strongly encourage you all to apply, and I think you should all apply for development management because it's the best degree we have. If you have any questions, please do send them along, and hopefully see most of you next year. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you very much.